This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. All investing involves risk.
So it's been more than a century since the word robot was first coined, and humanity's been fascinated by the idea ever since. But today, huge advances in material science, computing and AI could finally herald a new era for robotics. For investors, the implications could be profound. Welcome to L&G Talks Asset Management. I'm Matt Kemp, Senior Investment Sales Manager, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Henrik Christensen, one of the world's most influential voices in robotics and AI, and Axel Ballord, Business Development Leader from TMX. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you. Very happy to be here. Looking forward to the discussion.
Great to be with you today, Matt and Henrik.
So, gents, plenty to dive into. But before we do, Henrik, your biography is pretty extensive. Can you tell me more about what drew you into the world of robotics and AI?
Sure. So I'm not going to run you through the long bio. Instead, I'm going to say, I have three jobs. I'm a professor in robotics, so very much sort of developing next generation technology. I'm a serial entrepreneur, so I've started six companies, and I'm an investment advisor to companies like TMX.
Thank you. And Axel, tell me a bit more about your role.
Great to be with you today, Henrik and Matt, at TMX Vettify. And I joined for the acquisition of Robo Global, the business. We focus on delivering index solutions for investors globally.
Thank you. So, Henrik, lead author of the US robotics roadmap since 2008. What major predictions have come true and what surprised you the most?
So, we've done the roadmap five times. So, we do it every 4 years. And I would say on the first roadmap, we did not predict 3D cameras that came out of Microsoft. We did not predict how quickly collaborative robots would pick up. And we were more optimistic on autonomous driving cars than what has happened. So overall, we've been 80% accurate on predicting where the world is going. But we've had a few where we just said, we're very happy with our prediction accuracy, given that we're predicting 5, 10, 15 years into the future. We've done well. People can go back and now and say, wait a minute, you've thought this was going to happen? And we've actually done it.
Fantastic. So I've read, actually, you previously argued Hollywood has distorted public expectations of robotics. What misconception frustrates you the most, and how should the industry correct it?
So I think Hollywood has sort of painted this picture that we will have home robots, we will have RoboCop, we'll have all of these things. That has sort of, when I see people, everyday people, they're worried about, should I trust them? Can I really do this? And they say, when is it going to attack me? And I'm like, it's never going to attack you. And I've never met a robot I can't break in 1 minute. So that worries me that we have this kind of worry. So Hollywood has painted this very rosy, we're there, we can do all of these things. And in reality, we're not close. So that where I think we have to sort of calibrate to what can we do. We've seen tremendous progress the last few years, but it's only now we're getting to a point where it's realistic.
There's a view that robotics lack common sense. And I suppose if so, what does common sense mean in the robotics context? And how can we realistically give it to machines?
So I think the common sense is, if you think about how you organize your kitchen, so different cultures, Indian, British, American, would organize their kitchen in different ways. So if we were going to build a robot that can go into a home and I say, could you put away the coffee or the tea, or it would go in different places in each of those kitchens. So having a robot that understands what does it mean to organize a home, recognizing what are the cultural background and how do we play into this, that's sort of the common sense. So when I say, you know, could you, one of the things we're trying to do is build a robot that could put away the groceries. So if you order e-shopping groceries, it comes to your home. We build a robot where you give it this and said, could you put away the groceries? And now it has to understand, what should I put in the refrigerator? What should I put in the closet? What should I put under the sink? What? That's the common sense, and we're getting there, where robots can actually do this.
Well, understood. Sorry, Axel, I want to bring you into the conversation. We're often on the road together, meeting investors, and I think one frequent question that we've come across is, how can enterprises and governments unlock true operational value using AI? I think large language models simply just don't understand the world as humans do. So I think the question I think we often get asked, and I'm curious, is how can they be leveraged to power revenue generating or operational efficiency use cases in very different industry contexts?
Yeah, I think it's a great question, Matt. I mean, I think the first thing to look at is data. Data is the new oil, and we see so many companies and governments worldwide that don't master the data. So the first step I would say is to win and pick the right partner or platform in terms of data integration, data modeling into something that makes sense. You just said LLMs do not understand the world, which I think is a correct statement. They don't understand it like humans do, is probably what you meant here. And, you know, unless you give them the right context, meaning your enterprise context or the right training context, they probably won't make miracles in a general enterprise operational use case. So when we build investment strategies, we care a lot about the P&L that's generated or the synergies that are generated, and not just about algorithmic beauty. So first, you got to get the data right, the data foundation. Then you're going to model it semantically. On top of that, you can deploy very operational applications, machine learning applications, deep learning applications. Large language models are the cherry on top. They are the modeling logic that can benefit to your enterprise if you got the right data architecture, the right systems. And most importantly, you need to have an operator in the loop. Operational AI is not just for the specialist, it's not just for the IT expert, it's not just for the AI engineer. It has to be for the operator, for the supply chain manager, for the field worker, for different in the government sector, for different persons at different levels in the chain of command. And then you need to get their feedback and incorporate the feedback to get operational AI to truly work and deliver value. Many business leaders don't see value today, and that's because they probably haven't yet understood how to pick a right partner. And by the way, one also key thing here is to make sure that all that data value chain, which when it's well-structured, semantically can be so valuable and powerful, has good feedback loops, but is also very well secured. Because if it's not secured and it doesn't have the human in the loop, you're probably missing out on big time opportunities and competition will take over, whether it's in the government sector or in the commercial sector.
Thank you, Axel. Moving aside onto that, I've actually spoke to you about this the other day, Henrik. I've got an EU-Fi robot at home. It does a good job of mopping my ground floor. And so it does the mopping and the vacuuming. And, you know, I know Tesla, Optimus, Unitree have dominated the news wires. I don't really want a robot that can dance and administer karate kicks, right? How far away are we from affordable humanoid robots that can help with household tasks?
So I think realistically, we're probably 5 years away from this, and it has to do with the fact that, first of all, we don't have safety regulation. So today, it's not defined what can a robot do in your home, what cannot do in your home. How do we make sure that if you hit the emergency stop, it doesn't actually fall on you and it would injure you or injure pieces in your home? Second of all, we don't have hands today that are actually good enough. So we can do very simple grasping and manipulation in your home. But if you think about it, you wanted to be able to clean your dining room table. You wanted to be able to do the dishes. You wanted to be able to make the bed. All of these things, put away the groceries. We just don't have hands and manipulators today that can do that. And that's a big challenge, that the amount of services we can do is too small. Give it 5 years, I think we will be there.
That's interesting. So let's move away from the home. I think we've seen firsthand the logistics robots is becoming very popular. It's booming due to e-commerce. So what innovations do you expect to dominate warehouses in, say, the next 5 years?
We've seen the Kiva robots that are on Amazon. Amazon makes 1,000 of those robots every year. So we've seen Symbotic, Amazon, Ocado, a number of these sort of large-scale supply companies have adopted them very well. That's only 10% of logistics. So what we're going to see is a shift towards medium-sized logistics companies that will be able to do it. And today, in e-commerce, it's only the big ones that can compete. We need to make sure we're developing the technology so that all of the logistics companies can access this technology. And that's what's going to happen.
Okay. I mean, building on that point, I think I hosted a client visit at a warehouse in the Midlands a few years ago, and there was only 20 people working on the site. It was robotics and AI in operation. So I suppose looking at the job market, what jobs, in your opinion, are at the biggest risk due to this? Someone once said to me, plumbers are safe for now.
Oh, plumbers are certainly safe. So I think right now the AI thing is first going to come after white-collar jobs, not after blue-collar jobs. So I think that's important. And then I think in the blue-collar, there's lots of jobs. I think it's a misconception that we're going to use robots to replace people. Okay. We're going to use robots to empower people. I don't want them to do heavy lifting. I don't want them to do repetitive tasks that will injure their wrists and their elbows and their shoulders. So all of this, the robots should do. For a long time, the amount of sort of for more complex tasks, cognitive functions that are actually needed is way beyond what the AI can do. So I think we will see humans working with robots to solve more and more tasks, but we will take away the dirty, dull, and dangerous and enable a higher productivity. This morning, I mentioned the company Robust AI. They went into DHL and they increased the worker productivity by 60%.
Wow.
But it's by working with people. It's not by replacing people.
Yeah, that's good to hear. I mean, there definitely seems to be a hype around the world, AI. And I suppose my next question would be, what do you believe is the most overhyped capability in AI? And also, what is the most underrated?
I think the most hyped is that everybody thinks they're going to get a humanoid. And I'm like, yeah, okay. If you actually want real stuff done, you can do it much more engineered to a much higher efficiency. And that's where we're going to see something. So I think humanoids are extremely overhyped. And we need to sort of get back to reality of what we can do. I think there's so many everyday tasks, like the thing I mentioned at DHL, where people don't think about it and said, oh, yeah, that would actually be helpful. It could be anything from cleaning the streets to sort of so that all of these everyday tasks that are relatively simple, but it would make a huge difference because people are doing it today. Things like very heavy duty jobs like slaughterhouses, where people ruin their shoulders, their elbows and all of this, that we can automate and get much further.
Okay, it's good. Good to hear. I was listening to a podcast the other day, Professor Stuart Russell. I don't know if you know of him. He's basically called the godfather of AI, and he's publicly warned about the danger of AI. Do you agree with him?
No. So I think we have to remember that Hinton, who's one of the original fathers of this, is sort of 15 years ago said, radiologists will no longer have a job 5 years from now. We have a lot of radiologists left for this. So there's a lot of these where people are sort of using almost scare tactics to say all of this is going to go away. So I think we have to be careful. As I said, I haven't met a robot I can break in 1 minute. So we are going to need people to be able to do this. So I'm afraid of this. At the same time, I think it is important that we have to sort of be cautious if we think about things like ethics. So I think AI, I'm less worried about it's going to take over and sort of become a superpower, but I'm more worried about that we're not thinking about the ethical implications of privacy and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, it builds onto the question of regulation. I think, would it be fair to say we control AI, or does AI control us? And who should be responsible for managing this? I would assume government should regulate AI, yet surely that would slow innovation.
So I think governments or societies should control AI. And I think that's important. We should have the right regulation. And we're seeing this very much in Europe, where there's much stronger regulation than elsewhere in the world. On the other hand, I would argue that AI is actually controlling us today because it's providing us answers and we're reacting to this. So it's very much in the driver's seat rather than us being in the driver's seat.
Okay. Two fun questions. The first one, I know you've been involved in a lot of startups, but if you had unlimited funding for one robotics project, what would you build?
Good question. I would probably build a robot for cancer treatment.
Okay.
Because I think you know, we should use robotics for good. And this is one of the most challenging areas. And for that reason, I think we should go big. We should think impact.
Okay. Do you think we're anywhere near that at the moment, or
10 years out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Okay. And then lastly, what question about AI do you wish people asked you more about? Hopefully I've asked you all of the questions, but I've obviously missed one.
So I think, again, it sort of comes down to that, and Axel sort of addressed a little bit of that. I feel we're not thinking about the depths of AI. How does it impact processing, data, ethics? How does it impact how do we do learning? How do we design the right user interfaces? Today, I feel a lot of the AI techniques are being developed, and then we give it to users and said, here it is. And I'm like, no, we need to flip this around and understand, what can I do for you? And then how do I develop AI to do this, but with a full stack? So a lot of the investments we're talking about, it's not just about the AI layer. It's about the full stack. But I need it to be driven by, how can we help people rather than what can I do with technology?
Thank you. That sort of brings us to the end. It's been a fascinating subject to discuss. I really enjoy talking to you both and would love to talk to you in more. I think what I've learned today is that a humanoid robot won't be entering my household in the near future. Thank you so much for your time today. Henrik, thank you. Axel, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. The views expressed in this podcast are those of L&G's Asset Management Division, as at the date of publication. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and we're not soliciting any action based on it. The information discusses general market, economic or political issues, or industry or sector trends. It does not constitute research or investment, legal or tax advice. It is not recommendation or advertisement to buy or sell securities or pursue a particular investment strategy. Assumptions, opinions, and estimates are provided for illustrative purposes only. There is no guarantee that any forecast made will come to pass. No party shall have any right of action against L&G in relation to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Where this podcast contains third-party information, the accuracy or completeness of such information cannot be guaranteed, and we accept no responsibility or liability in respect of such information, not for distribution to any person in any jurisdiction where such distribution would be contrary to local law or regulations. Copyright 2025. Legal and General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Unless otherwise stated, references herein to L&G, we and us are meant to capture the global conglomerate that includes, in the European Economic Area, LGIM Managers Europe Limited, authorised and regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland as a UCITS management company pursuant to European Communities Undertaking for Collective Investment in Transferable Securities Regulations 2011 as amended, and as an Alternative Investment Fund Manager pursuant to the European Union Alternative Investment Fund Managers Regulations 2013 as amended. In the USA, Legal and General Investment Management America, Inc., a US SEC regulated investment advisor. In Japan, Legal and General Investment Management Japan, KK, a Japan FSA registered investment management company. In Hong Kong, issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, which is licensed by the Securities and Futures Commission. And in Singapore, issued by LGIM Singapore PTE Limited, company registration number 20223187 6W, which is regulated by the Monetary Authority of Singapore. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on LinkedIn or on our website.